This is On Location. I'm Tim Leitner. Today's episode comes to you from Michigan, North Dakota, and Alaska. But first, On Location is produced by the NCA Communications Committee with special production assistance from Joe Mamlin and me. You can find our podcast on iTunes, Anchor, Spotify, Google Podcast, Breaker, iHeartRadio, and Radio Public, among others. So subscribe today on your favorite podcast service and tell all your friends. On today's program, I host current NCA President Jim Fleming, Director of the Child Support Section of the North Dakota Department of Health and Human Services, with President-elect and incoming President Aaron Frisch, the 4D Director of the Michigan Child Support Program. The conversation centers around Jim and Aaron's leadership roles, how they started with the Child Support Program, their involvement with NCA, and how they prepared for the role of President. Listen as they talk about their challenges, successes, and passions, both during the NCA year now ending and for the new year ahead. They talk about NCA's name change, the Leadership Symposium in Anaheim, diversity, equity, and inclusion, and so much more. So much, in fact, that we will present this podcast in two parts to capture it all. You don't want to miss part two. It's going to be a great show, so stick around, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to NCA On Location, coming to you today from Michigan, North Dakota, and Alaska. I'm Tim Leitner, and I'm with CGI Technologies and Solutions, based in Anchorage, Alaska. And today we're joined by two of NCA's top leaders, Jim Fleming, NCA's current president, and Aaron Frisch, NCA's president-elect and incoming president come September 1st. This is a great opportunity for our listeners to get to know more about Jim and Aaron, their stories of where their journeys have taken them, and where they and NCA are headed. While no stranger to the podcast, let's ask our guests to introduce themselves. Jim?
Hi, Tim, and listeners to the podcast. I am Jim Fleming. I am the director of the North Dakota Child Support Program. That's what I've been doing for almost 13 years. When I'm not doing that or helping NCA with any of its committees, I am also a board member of WCSIC and a member of the NCCSD Executive Committee.
And hi, everybody. I'm Aaron Frisch. When I am not working with NCA, my day job is I am the Title 4D Child Support Director for the state of Michigan. And I also have recently started a not-for-profit National Child Support Policy Advocacy Organization. So that's what I do in my free time.
Awesome. Awesome. And Aaron, I've got to mention, you may not be in Michigan at this very moment. Do you want to tell our folks where you're at?
Yeah, sure. I'm actually in California, just here a couple weeks ago for Leadership Symposium, and I'm back again for the APHSA Economic Mobility and Wellbeing Conference, where I am doing a workshop tomorrow about the framework that NCA and APHSA and the National Council of Child Support Directors, NCCSD, have co-created. So I'm looking forward to that.
Awesome. I'm glad you're there. This sounds like it's, you know, really just up your alley. So let me ask both of you, how long have you been involved in the Child Support Program? And then maybe you can tell us what roles you've been a part of over the course of your careers, what got you interested in child support, maybe a story. Just fill us in a little bit about how you got to where you're at now.
So I guess I'll go first because I'm senior. I'm a little older than Aaron. I've been doing child support now for 29 years. I started out, which is ironic because when I was at law school, I was not interested in family law whatsoever. They had an elective course on family law. I didn't even bother taking that course. So the first time I had to learn about divorces and child support was taking the North Dakota bar exam based on a very quick self-study course that I was able to get my hands on. But despite that, I started in the Attorney General's office in their general counsel division. My first day of the job, they handed me a bunch of portfolios, and one of them had human services at the top. And inside was a number of eight divisions within that agency, including child support. And this was how I was introduced to my new client. They were kind of known at the time as a trouble client. So that portfolio had been well used and handed down to the newbie on staff. That was almost a tradition that the newbie would get that portfolio. But over the course of those 8 years in that position, I became more involved in child support. I really enjoyed what the work was, to the point that when they decided in 2002 to hire a deputy director, I applied and was given that position, and I kept my lawyer portfolio. So I was deputy director and in-house legal counsel for 8 years, including the time when we transitioned from being state supervised county administered to being state administered. And then when my predecessor retired in 2010, I applied and was awarded the position as the director. So that's been coming up on 13 years now and 29 total years in child support.
That's awesome. And Erin, how about you?
Yeah, so I'm going to even go back a little bit farther to get to sort of how child support happened. I went to school at Michigan State University at their public policy school, which is called James Madison College. And so I have a public policy undergrad degree and was on my way to grad school, like most good public policy folks are, when this was the early 90s, a company then called Anderson Consulting said that they were looking to recruit at my little public policy college within Michigan State. And my then boyfriend, now husband, who knew he wanted to go work for one of the big consulting firms, when I told him about this opportunity to interview with Anderson Consulting, without even thinking, he was like, they won't hire you. That was all I needed as an incentive to just see if I could prove him wrong on that front. So I went ahead and applied and interviewed with Anderson Consulting, and sure enough, they did hire me. I started about 3 months before my then boyfriend, now husband, started there. And I worked for Anderson Consulting, and then through its switch to what is now Accenture, for over a decade. And what actually brought me to child support was my work at Accenture. So it was 2003, and I was traveling a lot for Accenture, and I had a really, well, traumatic experience. I was on a project in Atlanta where I miscarried my first pregnancy and ended up going from the airport to the hospital and having to have emergency surgery. And when I finally came home, I really was not interested in traveling so much anymore. And my husband was working on the Michigan child support system for Accenture. Also, a very good friend of mine that started with me at Accenture way back in 1998 was also working on that project. And she called me one day and she said, Erin, I would really love it if you would come help me stand up the quality assurance or testing unit for the Michigan Child Support Enforcement System, or what we call MISIS project. And the timing was just really good. It was at home. It was we were living in right outside of Lansing, and it was a Lansing-based project. And so not really having any idea what child support was, I said yes, because it gave me a chance to be home and recover. And so that's what I did. So I came into child support through the systems integration perspective. And I did that, gosh, for another 6 or 8 years, eventually working my way up to be the director of that project. And had a wonderful client, if I do say so myself, in the Michigan Child Support Program. And the current 4D director at that time, when I had first started, I was really impressed with her. And I asked her early on when I first showed up, hey, could we go to lunch? And can I just ask you, how does one become a 4D director? Like, how is that a thing? And she was like, of course, let's do that. Well, then I got pregnant and had two babies. And before I knew it, it had been a few years. And she called me one day. She said, Erin, remember how you wanted to have lunch and talk about what it meant to be a 4D director. And I said, yeah, I do remember that. I can't believe you remember that. She said, it's time we have that lunch and we talk. She had an opening on her team for a director of operations position through some early retirements that had happened at the state and invited me to consider applying for that position. It was at a time in my career where I really needed to make a choice between, did I want to go sell work for Accenture to governments, or did I want to do something else? And after going through the process and reflecting on it, I said, hey, I really want to have a bigger impact on the families of Michigan than I can, and I ever will be able to working in the private sector. So she hired me as her operations director. And when she did that, she said, Erin, I think I have probably 2 years before I retire. And I want you to know that I think you would make a great 4D director. And I said, oh, okay. So I spent that first year sort of understanding in great detail the operations of the child support program in Michigan. And I started in October. Halloween was my first day with the state. My first official duty was to judge the Halloween costume contest that day. I think my boss saw me as a fresh perspective. I didn't really know everybody, so I couldn't. I didn't really know who I was judging. So in December of that year, her mother passed away kind of quickly, unexpectedly. And she came back in January. She said, Erin, I know I told you it was 2 years so I was going to retire, but I'm going to retire this year. So my 2 years became 1 year. I was really grateful to her for many, many things, including sort of giving me that heads up. So about a year to the date after I did the operations director job, I became the 4D director. And in that role, thought I knew what I was getting into. I remember calling my predecessor about 3 months in saying, what have I done? What were you thinking? Why didn't you tell me what was involved in this job? And she said, well, because I wanted you to take it, of course. So I've had a lot of roles on the system side when it comes to child support. I've had a lot of supervisory roles, but I am not one of those folks who grew up as a caseworker and made their way through the whole program. And I'm not an attorney. So really got here mostly on my leadership skills, which I don't know what that says exactly for the fate of Michigan's child support program, but that's sort of how I got where I am.
Well, I think it means Michigan's in good hands. And I've got to say, I appreciate you sharing. It was very kind of you to share all that information. So let me pivot just a tiny bit here and ask how you both got involved in NCIA. Can you share what committees or other NCIA opportunities that you've been a part of over the years? And maybe is there any committee that has really struck a chord or that you're more passionate about than others, which I've got a feeling maybe there are, or maybe it's like, you know, your children, you know, you don't want to say just, you know, who's eking out above the other, but I'll leave that.
Sure. So I'll go first on this one. The first NCIA conference that I remember attending was in San Francisco. And I was still working for Accenture then and was totally blown away, overwhelmed, not just by the fact that there were so many people in the world who cared so much about child support, but also the community that existed, and was a little bit felt like an outsider looking in for those first couple of years that I was a member of NCIA, and kept showing up to conferences, didn't really get involved in committee work or volunteering until after I became 4D director. And Colleen Eubanks, who was a former executive director, made a point to reach out to me. I think it was probably a policy forum 1 year, and just introduce herself and share a little bit about NCIA with me and really encourage me to get involved, and was very welcoming, which really made a huge difference, because up until then, I sort of had this perception, I'm going to be honest, that NCIA didn't really care about you unless you were some sort of executive level position within your organization. And so I sort of carried that with me for a long time, honestly. And when I did run for the board, I ran talking about me wanting us to figure out organizationally how we become more inclusive, how we connect better. And it's something I still talk about to this day. So I have been a board member for most of the last 6 or 8 years. I'm very bad at counting time. I've been secretary for the last 2 years, and I have served on many, many committees at this point. I've co-chaired policy forum a couple of times, finance committee. When I first joined the board, I was professional development co-chair, have been on committee planning, have been on policy and government relations for many years. And I will say that some of the my favorite work that I've done with NCIA was actually an ad hoc committee that we have created a few times over the years to do strategic planning. So I know most folks cringe at the thought of having to do strategic planning work. And honestly, I do too sometimes. But it was very fun to work with the board to think about our course for the future and who we were and who we wanted to be. And we are still using a form of that strategic plan. And I think it has served us well in terms of guiding us. So that would be one of my favorite things I've gotten to do over the years. Jim and I both are big policy people, so PGR is always a favorite. And I think that that one has kept, not only do I feel like I've been able to contribute in that space, but I've gotten a ton out of working on that committee in terms of understanding bigger picture when it comes to child support and policy decisions and what's going on across the country.
So I wish Aaron hadn't mentioned San Francisco NCIA, because that was one of the last NCIAs I didn't get to go to. Even though North Dakota received an award for the program of the year, and I wrote the director's acceptance speech and had a heavy hand in the project that they used to give the award. So I'm still, even now, this many years later, still a little regretful that I have yet to set foot in the Golden Gate City, and I can't wait to finally get out there and do it. Since I had been the deputy for 8 years before becoming the director, my director was great at giving me a chance to go to the NCIA events, as well as WCSEC and ARICSA. I got to do a few presentations on some panels. And when I became the director, I didn't immediately jump into the committee work for NCIA or to involve in NCIA. I felt like I kind of needed to learn the director side of the job. But I was pretty active in NCCSD and got to meet a lady named Sharon Santilli. And Sharon was a big one for drawing me into NCIA, saying, you know, Jim, clearly with your background in policy, you would have a lot to add. Along the way, I met a lady from our neighbor state named Marianne Wellbank from Montana. Marianne, it was incessant in saying, Jim, you got to get into NCIA, you got into NCIA. And I'd keep pushing her off. But NCIA president at the time, Barb Saunders, was with a company that was providing services to North Dakota, and she knew me as well. And so through the collective efforts of all three of them, there came a point after I became the director where I said, all right, I'll serve on an NCIA committee. And so they put me on the policy committee for a year before I became a board member. And then I was hooked. So I'm in the process of assembling a revised board history list. So Aaron, you first ran for the board in 15. So you've got 8 years. That's how long that you've had. I actually ran for the board for the first time in 2013 and was reelected to another 3-year term in 2016 before beginning a 4-year stint as the treasurer and now 2 years as the president-elect and the president. So it's been a blessed 10 years for me. It's been great to fill all of those roles and to meet all those folks. It almost feels like I've grown up with the NCIA board. You know, it's not like it's not like I was a 20-year-old kid 10 years ago, but it seems like a lot has happened in those 10 years. But those are the folks that were really just encouraging about being on the committees. And I think they recognized from presentations that, you know, maybe there's some knowledge there, certainly a sarcastic sense of humor that comes in handy once in a while for entertainment value. But they brought me in, and then it kind of got stuck. I've remained pretty committed to the PGR committee. I chaired that for several years, so that was kind of a time commitment. You know, when you're committed to chairing one of those big committees, you've got a little bit of time left over, but they try not to stretch you too thin by putting you on other committees. I've been on Policy Forum and Leadership Symposium, but from day one, the committees I started on were Policy and CSQ, And then a year or two later, I got into finance. And yeah, Tim, I gave you grief with a similar question last year. You can't ask me to pick among my, it's like picking among your favorite children. Who's going to be your favorite? The answer is the one who's home at the time is the answer to that, by the way. When you're an empty nester, your favorite child is the one that bothers to come home most recently. That's your favorite. But I really appreciate the variety of those committees that I've served on, because when you look at the outward-facing committees, during my time on the PGR committee is when we really decided to make the resolutions more robust and the quick facts more pertinent. So we put a lot of outward-facing documents in those last 10 years out there. And with CSQ, of course, we're bringing a light to the practices and the issues that really are at the forefront of what we do. But on the other hand, being on finance, especially as the treasurer for those years, it inundates you in the practical side of the organization. You know, how does NCS survive? How do we make it from year to year? What do we do to do that? And so it's been great to indulge both sides of the brain. You get out there on the policy side, and this is why we exist. And then you go back and you have a finance committee and say, well, this is how we exist as an organization. And I really feel fortunate to have worked with several people a few years ago who were so committed to making webinars free as a component of membership in NCIA. I was at the treasurer at the time where we kind of got that ask and say, is there any way that we can make this happen without breaking the budget? And I was glad to have a hand in coming up with a solution that was really an incremental increase in dues for members. It wasn't hateful big, but what it allowed to do was to replace the lost webinar revenue with enough membership revenue to fill in the hole and make it happen. And I mentioned a leadership symposium. I mean, who'd have known we would have had this thing called COVID that would have made virtual training a lifeline for people to continue working and continue getting better at what they could do when we could not meet in person. So it's been a long history, and it's just been really, really, really grateful to be on both the policy and the finance side of the house.
You know, I'd almost say you may have answered this, but I'm going to ask it anyhow. Is there any one or any set of events that have prepared you for the NCIA presidency? And with all that information you just put forth, I kind of gathered that that's probably in there, but I'm just going to ask outright, is there anything else you wanted to add to that that's really prepared you, Jim, for the moment that you're in and just about to move out of, or Aaron, for you as you get ready to take and officially step into?
Yeah, you're right, Tim. I kind of covered that in terms of just being exposed to the policy side and the operation side, but also just to be on the board for so many years to kind of see what worked and what didn't with regard to the executive committee and lines of communication. I think that was really helpful experience to kind of be on the outside of the exec looking in, and then being on the exec and looking at what the president's doing and kind of learn by their example.
And I would add, I think, I'm not sure I would call it an event, but truly the relationships that are built over time as being part of this organization are really vital to the success of the organization. So, you know, I'm very blessed and grateful to have very many good friends in this community, and coming into presidency, recognizing that you need a lot of friends to be successful in a role like this. That is, you know, we're all volunteering our time as in addition to our day jobs. And so I'm really grateful for the investments in time that I have made and others have made in me to build those relationships as I come into my year as president.
Yeah, you definitely don't go it alone. That's for sure. So Aaron, I've got to kind of just mention this. I was privileged to take in, I don't know if privilege is the right word, but it was fun to walk with you to the Angel Stadium in Anaheim and get to see a ball game. But one thing that I overheard and just kind of witnessed, if you will, is I heard you ask different NCIA presidents for one piece of advice as you get ready to embark on this new journey. And I'm sure that Jim has done this in the past too, but can you kind of share what kind of advice did you get as you get ready for this?
Yeah, so I have asked many past presidents now for a piece of advice, and I have heard so many different things. It was really interesting. It wasn't a consistent answer from anyone, which I think goes to both the diversity of folks we've had as president of this organization, as well as, you know, what was sort of important at the time. So I've heard really great pieces of advice from many folks. I think some that have stuck with me include pick a thing. A year goes fast. And so stay focused on one or two things that you want to accomplish for the year, and make sure that you've organized the things that happen as part of our regular NCA program year around those priorities. Don't sweat the small stuff. Recognize that the work of this organization is going to happen, and that, you know, you don't have to be in every committee meeting, that there are really amazing people who are empowered to do the work of the organization. And I think the last piece that I got that I would share is, remember, you have a lot of folks rooting for you and willing to help you. And don't be shy about asking for help when you need it.
I agree. Ironically, even though Erin is following me as the president of NCA, I followed her as the president of NCCSD. And so she was one of many presidents in my time serving on these associations that I'm up to 10 presidents now in NCA, counting Erin, to look at and watch what they do. Erin doesn't need this advice from me, but if it had been somebody who didn't have her experience, I would say trust others to be good too. Because the mistake a person can make when they're in a leadership position is making it all about the me instead of the we, and thinking that they need to be at the hub of every improvement and every initiative. And there's simply not enough time in the day. And you really kind of turn others off, because why would they get invested in try to do good work if you're going to take it over anyway? So the advice to other presidents that is not necessary for Erin will be, trust others to be good too, because, you know, the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. Collectively, we get a whole bunch done. I would be remiss if I didn't mention the support that NCA has in their board of directors. There are 23 voting members of the NCA board, plus four ex officios who offer great wisdom and experience of their own. And they are wonderfully responsive people. We had such a strong board. Just today, as we're recording this podcast, I put out a question to the board, and within 4 hours, we had 22 out of 23 votes cast, with the missing one being the guy over in Germany who is going to wake up to this in a few hours and know that he can vote on it. That kind of support and turnaround from the board really allows us to have a very engaged board and a very supportive board. And having that army behind you to be carrying out the initiatives and doing the work, I think that's just instrumental in the success of any executive of an organization.
Yeah. Hey, Jim, I would also offer up, I don't think I asked you for your specific piece of advice. However, what I've watched you very closely over the last year. And what you have modeled for me that I am taking with me is similar to what you said, but the way that I think about it is, remember that you are representing a diverse organization, that this isn't about you and your own perspectives or views. And you have just done a tremendous job of keeping in mind the good of the organization overall, recognizing that we have a lot of diverse views and opinions on the board, but also on our committees and within the organization. Yeah. And so I really admired the way that you have held both your strong personal beliefs and shepherding the good of the organization at the same time.
Well, that means a lot. And I appreciate that, because you're right. When you're not the president, you have the prerogative of being an advocate for your point of view, and you can be pretty passionate about it. And it was hard for me, because to go from that advocate role to being in the president role and say, all right, I need to make sure all the voices are heard, and not just a matter of persuading the group that what I want to happen is the only possible wise outcome. You know, it helped to be the president of NCCSD for a couple of years to also recognize you need to represent the interests of the whole group, as diverse as it is. But I appreciate that, because it was a hard transition when somebody is so passionate advocate for what you think is the right answer, to remember as the president, you've got to bring those voices forward. I certainly give a lot of credit to my predecessors, including especially Lori Bengston, who I thought was just such a model for bringing forward everybody's input and valuing everybody's input. That is a challenge when you're the president, is you got to set aside sometimes what you personally would like to have and make sure that everybody feels heard. And I appreciate that, but you know, Aaron, I sure as heck wouldn't finger. I need to tell you that, because you would do that naturally anyway.
Yeah.
So true. So true. So Jim, you served as president of NC over the past year. Can you tell us what has been the theme for your presidential year? And share with us a little bit about how you decided or how you got to that theme. And Aaron, I'm going to come to you next on this.
So I was sitting at ERICSA in 2022 as the president-elect, knowing that I was going to have to come up with such deep, profound things as themes when I became the president, which is not my strength. But I was listening to the keynote speaker, and it was almost like he was finding the words to express the thoughts that I couldn't yet express. And what he really talked about was combining skills with passion. That one without the other, you're just not going to be very successful. You need to have both. And so that really stuck with me. And even then, since I did know I was going to be the president, I was the president-elect, I said, all right, I got the origins of my theme in here. And I started typing on my phone the notes so I wouldn't forget the words he was doing. And I came back, and what we came up with was the theme for the 2023 policy forum, delivering quality services with a passion for helping families. And that really was the combination of skills in what we do and the passion to give a darn about whether our work is doing any good for anybody. That's been the theme that I have strived for. It originated in the 2022 ERICSA conference. And in general, this year, I've just tried to sometimes be a voice for reminding folks that we more and more spend time talking about the barriers that parents have to payment. And those are really real. And until Vicki presented a lot of things back 7-8 years ago, I think a lot of us were not paying enough attention to those barriers. But on the other hand, I think it's still important for us to realize that there is a whole lot of parents out there who have an ability to pay but don't. They're not all down on their luck. They're not all facing challenges in life. Some of them are just scoundrels and they don't pay what they're supposed to and they're really good at evading it. And so I wouldn't want us to lose that. Ironically, as we'll talk about, I mean, one of the things we did in the last year was change our name from the Enforcement Association to Engagement Association. Because we aren't all about enforcement. And I agree with that completely. We aren't all about enforcement, but it still is a huge part of what we do. So when we talk about different enforcement tools, I cringe when the first place we go to is how to reduce our use of those tools. Let's focus on using them well. For those that are not willfully behind, then let's focus on this new developing array of parent-friendly services we have to address those barriers. But if they are willfully unable to pay, let's not be okay with that as an outcome. Let's be representatives of the families that need this support and say, you have an ability to pay and you aren't. We're not going to be real happy with you until you change that pattern of behavior. So it was a theme that I brought, but it was as well for me in terms of focusing on the services we provide, is it's not just about being the kinder, gentler child support. It's about being effective for both parents and modifying that expectation based on what we're seeing in the case either way.
Yeah, I would imagine that engagement has some different levels or some different flavors to it. So I think that's well said. Aaron, what about you? Do you have a theme developed yet? Do you have some ideas, some thoughts you want to share?
Sure. I appreciate the opportunity to do so. So for me, I've been thinking a lot about community and the power of community and building on this, I think, strong foundation of engagement that has been a theme for a couple of years, culminating in our name change this year. Nice job, Jim. And so for me, the power of community is much more than belonging to something. It's about doing something together that makes belonging matter. And I think what we can do as NCIA gets at that doing something that matters and doing it collectively. So that to me looks at both, you know, continuing to build relationships relationships of trust, relationships of accountability. How do we continue to include more and more voices in the conversations we're having, as well as deepening our understanding of systems and the effects that they can have on people's lives? So as I think about this theme around the power of community, there's a proverb that sometimes it gets attributed as an African proverb. I've also seen an African proverb that says, if something's being attributed as an African proverb, it's probably not an African proverb. But it goes like this. If you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. And so that is sort of what I'm using as our theme for the year. And when I think about community, I not only think about our NCA community and how do we continue to strengthen and build those ties and those bonds and those relationships, but I also think about the ways in which our programs operate in the communities in which we're serving, and how connected are we to the community of participants in our program, and in what ways can an NCA foster and facilitate programs thinking about their connection to their local communities. You know, and that is a lot of our things around, you know, having a common values and a shared purpose. And in this time of transition that I feel like child support has been in now for a number of years, I was just sharing, I met some folks at this conference from Ohio that work in SNAP. And when I said I was the child support director, they immediately went to the common trope around deadbeat dads, right? Like you're getting the guys. And so I started to share with them a little bit about this recognition that when there's income to transfer, child support is really good at our jobs. And more we've come to appreciate and understand that there are many families out there who want to do right by their kids. And income transfer is just not viable because there isn't much income around. And so I think we have continuing to live into these values around being family-centered, around recognizing that we're not here just for moms or dads, but that we think about entire families. One of the framing tools that I've used for myself and started to talk about with others is not proposing any official name changes. I want to make that clear. But what if we thought about the child support program as the parent support program? And how would that change the way we think about our role and the services we provide, and recognizing that ultimately, right, it isn't my job to take care of somebody's child. But in the spirit that, you know, everyone is my child as a community, how are we helping parents do right by their children? So I think there's that aspect to think about when we think about community as well. And so I'm looking forward to where we might be able to explore some of those themes, recognizing that balance is always greater than perfection. And we will have to continue, I think, holding both of these identities that we are wrestling with as a community and as a program. And just to say, really continue to stay curious about how things are contributing that we might not have noticed before. And as we learn to know better, how do we do better?
So the listeners of the podcast might just think, okay, they just gave 180 degree different answers. And I don't feel that way at all. I don't. And Aaron and I, we have a great tradition of talking on Friday afternoons, and we talk about this stuff. And I don't feel that way at all, because what we're really talking about is the best child support is delivered with the family as the center. We run a real risk when we rely on automation that bits and bytes and computer logic are the heart of what we do and not the family. And so when you have the family as the focus, you're looking at their particular facts and circumstances. Sometimes it's clear that the nudge needs to be with the parent who owes the amount, because they do have that ability. But other times you have scenarios like we've seen in North Dakota with our employment project, where they lost their job and they're having a hard time finding another one. And so services there that can help with barriers to employment, maybe get you a new pair of boots and some tools to go to a job, can mean all of the difference in regaining income earning ability. It's not for lack of effort. It is just is that they've had a setback and they need a little help to get over that setback. But at the end of the day, it still comes down to let's have the family as the center. And we're not talking about family just being the custodial parent with the child, but also recognizing the NCP, we want them to be engaged. We want them to be part of the child's life. That's hard to do when they don't live together. So what is it that we can do to help foster a good relationship?
Yeah, and I would agree, just to say out loud. So clearly, Tim, you can tell Jim and I are policy wonks at heart, and we can go here very quickly and easily and hang out here for quite some time if you let us. And Jim's right. We very often, I think, come at vision for the program from the very same set of core values. And this is why Jim and I have been friends forever and will be friends forever, because I completely agree that there is a role for enforcement in this program. It is very disturbing to me when I hear us start talking about enforcement like it's a dirty word. I look at enforcement as neither good or bad. It is a set of tools, and we figure out what tools work in which situations. And I think even some of those tools can not be punitive at all and still be considered enforcement. Things like the employment services that we are, more and more of us are starting to figure out how to offer. You know, I think lots of supports are really ultimately about how do I get you to abide by this order that you have, so considered enforcement. But I think there's a lot of new tools in our tool belt that we can continue to add. And at the heart of it, it really is what is right for the particular family. So, like I said, Jim and I like to say we're our favorite people to disagree with each other. And I think we can do that effectively because we come from sort of the same foundation in terms of the role and the need for child support to exist in the world.
You know, Erin, just thinking out loud here, for those of our listeners that have attended policy forums in the past, or even leadership symposiums, this very much sounds like a plenary session to me with you and Jim up on the dais. So kind of familiar. So Jim, let me ask this of you. This past year has been full of achievements. I'm going to let you kind of take the lead on this, but I'm going to guess there have been some surprises as well. So let me ask you this. It's almost like, riddle me this. What has been one of your greatest challenges during this year as president?
Henry Ruskin's retirement. Erin talked about picking two things that you're going to do. You start out with your two things, and then she throws a retirement curveball at you. And it's like, I don't know if I'm going to ever get back to working on those two things, because now we have the need to update the job description. We need to work with our contractor to get the job posting out there. You need to interview the candidates. And then you have this challenge of knowledge transition. Because when you think about it, NCA presidents come and go on an annual basis. The executive director is the one that's supposed to know all the details. This is how we usually do things. And so when you lose your executive director, you're losing all of that institutional knowledge and memory of the multitude of little details that are really not perceived as being worth writing down. But then they're the key to doing something that doesn't get people upset because, well, we've always done it this way or that way. So the greatest challenge, far and away, Emery's retirement, and how we just go through that knowledge transfer process. Not even the logistics of the interviews and the job description, but just trying to bridge that knowledge transition.
Right. And it wasn't just the NCA executive director. It was Anne-Marie, who'd been around in different capacities mostly for, I'll just say, a long time. Had all that information, all that knowledge, all that encouragement. And now she says she's gone.
Exactly.
Stay tuned to next week for part two of The Passing of the Gavel. On Location is available on iTunes, Anchor, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and anywhere you get your podcasts. We have a lot of great episodes on the way, so be sure to subscribe and listen to all of our previous episodes as well. We also appreciate your ratings, your feedback, your comments, and your suggestions. If you'd like to be a guest on the show, please reach out to us on the contact link on our website. On Location is a production of the NCA Communications Committee with special production assistance from Joe Mamlin and me. Thanks again for joining me. I'm Tim Leitner, and this has been On Location.